So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hello, and welcome to 90 Day Fiancé MK. I'm Mr. O, and today, Ms. H and I will be discussing Season 8, Episode 7 of Happily Ever After. In this episode, Jasmine tries to forget about some bad news with a trip to Miami. Kobe tries to get his friends to just move on and have some fun. Ed gives Liz a very short window to discuss their entire breakup. Patrick's dad has some chores for Patrick while he's in town. Ashley and Manuel meet both his uncle and her friend, the Alien Whisperer. And Lauren has her final meeting with a doctor before her surgery. And Mahmoud leaves Nicole to find a very expensive hotel. We'll be back again next week to talk about Episode 8. We're also back on our other channel, Love After Lockup MK, covering the new season of Love During Lockup. All right, thanks for listening. Stay safe and enjoy.
Hello, Mr. O.
Hello, Miss H.
How are you today?
I'm doing okay. We had late night, game coaching, everything, and I don't actually have to go into the building tomorrow because I have an out-of-the-building meeting, which is always exciting. So, yeah.
Exciting because you get a mini break from the students, even though it's still work.
It is still work, but it's like when we have out-of-building meetings, the meeting will be like my duty day is from 8:30 to 3 or whatever.
Yeah.
And the meeting will just be like from 9:30 to 1:30. But since it covers the first half of the day and the second half of the day, they have to provide a sub the whole day. So then I'm like, well, not going to the building, at the meeting.
Nice. I'm counting down. We have 4 more weeks until summer vacation. I'm so stoked.
Yeah, we have more than that. We have 7 weeks for summer vacation. So,
well, 4 more weeks until I see you, because that's when reading's happening too.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
And speaking of, let's start with people who are maybe seeing a bit too much of their friends. And that's, let's start with Emily and Kobe, because we're still in the club where Emily has stormed off. And his friends are confused as to why she's angry, which is all ridiculous. They 2 seconds ago were like, you're bossy. We hate you. You're bossy. You're so bossy. You won't shut up. And she walks away and they're like, what's her problem? We're just telling what's going on. So anyway, with his friends, Kobe is trying to tell them after she leaves that he's really not looking for their approval or their advice right now. He already has 2 kids with Emily. So it's not about stopping this marriage or anything. It's... They're just supposed to be hanging out and getting to know each other a little bit better. So then he leaves to go get Emily. So she's mostly upset that they were interrupting her. That was her biggest beef. It's like she couldn't even finish get her side of the story out. They kept interrupting. And she feels like this was also supposed to be just like a hangout session and not a huge battle of cultures. So he's asking her to just listen what they say and say whatever. I just am trying to have fun. That's Kobe's entire mantra. So I just came to the club to have fun and I don't want to do this anymore. So he feels again as he's in a no-win situation and he's trying to do his best to bridge the gap. So she's like, it's 5-on-1. I don't like it. And then he's like, how is it 5-on-1? I'm sticking up for you. And she says, not enough and blah, blah, blah. She thinks the friends are trying to sabotage the relationship, but then we get to talking about the wedding. And she also recognizes that Kobe's not going to have any fun at his wedding if his friends aren't there. And it would be awkward if they just left and didn't come back or, invite them or anything. They get back to the table and Valerie starts to try to explain Cameroonian culture. When men are talking, women are expected to be quiet. And she's like, well, no, I'm not doing that. And they're like, well, then that means you're bossy. I don't know what you want. That's bossy. So at that point, she just – her response to that is to get up and pour a whole lot more Jack into her cup. So another friend talks about blending cultures and Kobe is just like, oh my God, can we please stop talking about this and just dance and drink? I don't want to do this anymore. This is such a downer. However, that does not work. They keep asking him, well, do you think you can maintain this relationship? And then that's when Emily brings up the wedding again. She's like, why would you even be at this wedding? And Kobe is, at this point, is kind of agreeing. Why do you want to go to this wedding for a relationship that you're like, this thing's not going to work. It's a failure. You guys can't maintain this. So then Kobe gets up and leaves as they're all just like, Kobe, 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 come back, come on, Kobe. And they just leave. So I guess my question is this, because I kind of was on the idea of, do you really want to be at a wedding that you think is going to fail? But I mean, how many weddings have you been to where you were at the wedding being like, these people are totally getting divorced?
To be honest, only one. And it was because it was a very disastrous, and I've told you personally the story a bazillion times, I feel like, of the very, very disastrous co-ed bachelorette party. Right. And it was like so disastrous that it was like, there's no way these people will stay married. And they didn't. But yeah, it was one of those things where you... I think I did a check-in with my friend to see, like, okay, so what are we feeling now? Oh, okay, we're doing this? Okay, I guess I have to support you, right? And so you go there because it's like you're supporting the person. And I felt like I gave her the opportunity to, you know, tell me that she didn't think this was going to work out. And she had, I would have jumped on board and been like, okay, listen, like, we can get out of here.
Let's
like,
run away bride this thing. Let's go.
Right. Let's run away bride this thing. But, you know, it's like, if you don't think it's going to work, I think you do have some obligation as a friend to be supportive. You can certainly make your protests more known than I did. Right. But I mean, what I find ridiculous are the people who are just like, oh, you're going to be with that person. You're going to choose to be with that person, even though that person is toxic and you guys aren't meant to be together. I'm going to stop being friends with you because that's how strongly I feel. And it's right. Like, you're being a martyr for what exactly? That's not a good friend.
No, I mean, because at the end of the day, you might have, it might be somebody you dislike so much that you're like, I don't want to be around this person. Yeah. And that might mean like, so when he's around, I won't be. And when you're not with him, we will hang out. That's cool. And then, but that doesn't mean it has to be like, I have to cut myself off from you as a friend. Right. Like, oh my God, how dare you not take my advice? Because that's a weird way of centering yourself in a story that is not yours.
Yeah. But I don't think it's all that uncommon. You hear like, and I mean, maybe not uncommon, like when we're younger, it's like, you know, I feel like when you're in school and stuff like that, you hear about this weird drama like, oh, so-and-so isn't friends with them because they're dating someone and so-and-so disapproves. And you're just like, why is that like a thing? But like, it kind of is when you're younger.
Yeah. I mean, I think it, I don't know. I want to say like, among like groups of guys, it's very much like, you know, but groups of guys are different because you're like, what's his girlfriend's name? I don't know. Like, I can't remember.
You're just like, oh, we don't like her. And then usually I feel like also the other thing is like, if you don't like someone's significant other, the friend group usually is just like, we don't like them. And so they kind of like start to fade out as a friend.
Yeah.
You
know, sure,
but then that kind of makes you wonder, like, how good of friends were you in the first place? That someone could just fade out or disappear and, you know, everyone's just kind of like, okay, well, it's because of that relationship. All right.
But like Kobe, even this is an even weirder situation because as Kobe brought up, they've been married for a while and they have two children together. He's like, whatever you guys have to say, it's too late to say it. This is done. Like, I'm not going to be like, you know what? You guys are right. I'm not going to be happy. Let me just get divorced from the mother of my children, even though I'm currently doing okay, because I might not be okay. That doesn't make any sense. What are they trying to get out of this?
Exactly. It's like, what do you expect this to look like? Your idea of this isn't going to work out. Well, what is he supposed to do? Go back in time, get rid of the kids? Like, you know, it's, you have a family and an obligation to that family to at least, you know, try make it work when things are good like now.
Right. But and to be fair, I think what they think is that in order to make this work, you have to get on top of her and turn her into a traditional Cameroonian woman. You have to stand up for her, not let her tell you what to do and insult her when she is and you know, insult her, interrupt her when she's talking over you. You have to like train her better, you know, and it's like, that's never going to be Kobe and that's never going to work for an American woman.
Yeah. That whole idea is just really absurd. And speaking of absurd, I cannot even believe this segment with Ashley and Manuel. So Ashley and Manuel, they're getting ready to go see Manuel's family. He's feeling very good and happy. And Ashley is excited to meet his family too, but she's getting nervous and anxious. Ashley doesn't know what they know about her. Manuel, they're in the car and he points out a witch and Ashley seems annoyed because it's a billboard for Wicked, which she tries to explain is just a show. She tells him that it's 2023 and that witches don't ride on broomsticks. Manuel says, yeah, that obviously they drive in cars, but witches, even modern witches, are bad. Ashley doesn't want to downplay her witchiness, and it really annoys me she keeps on calling it that. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't like being controlled. She hasn't decided whether or not to use the word witch. Manuel tells her to be nice and to be a good person if she wants to have a good relationship with his family. Manuel doesn't think the trip is about her, and it's about him reconnecting with his family. He's regretting bringing her because she has an attitude about this whole witch thing. They go to a store, which then ends up having a restaurant in the back, and Ashley knows that this is a big deal, so she hopes it goes well. They meet his uncle, who greets them with a hug. Manuel hasn't seen him in 6 years. He just hopes Ashley knows when to keep her mouth shut. Leopoldo has lived in the U.S. for 30 years. He's happy to meet his new niece. Ashley tells him that she's been wanting to meet his family, and Leopoldo says that Manuel speaks highly of her. He talks about a marriage in God's eyes, and Ashley's eyes kind of bug out, and she just kind of smiles and nods. She's surprised that Leopoldo is preaching Bible verses at lunch, and she didn't really believe Manuel when he said that his family was very religious. She's not trying to disrespect her elder, so she's just going to go along. He asks if Ashley is religious, and Ashley says she works with people and their energy, like astrology and tarot. Leopoldo doesn't believe in that because he believes in God. Ashley says that she also believes in God, but it's just different for her. She believes in spirituality and deities, and she calls on them to help when she needs it. Leopoldo accepts that it's his niece, but he tells us that he doesn't believe in what she believes in. He just tells her to trust in God, and Ashley just says, that's true. Ashley isn't trying to fight with Manuel or make a bad impression, so she decides not to use the word witch, which relieves Manuel. He says the next time they will visit that he will be alone, as they all laugh. Later, Ashley and Manuel meet up with Ashley's friend Aaron, and Manuel is wearing this very pink, very weird clubbing shirt. I don't know how else to describe it. She brings up that Ecuador is known for aliens, and Manuel, he's heard about it, but he kind of dismisses it. Aaron says that she's been channeling some of that alien energy. She says that she can get different beings to speak to her about energies. Ashley is excited, and Manuel just goes along with it because Aaron's going to do some kind of reading or I don't know, whatever it is that she does. Aaron asks them to cross their arms as she tries to move the energy through her body. She speaks another language. Manuel is feeling kind of strange as she speaks this language of light. That's what she calls it, her language of light.
She's the light talker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Manuel mocks it in his interview and Ashley just looks at him like death stare and so annoyed. Aaron says on a soul level, they are connecting. She says that they are struggling with communication and they need to establish trust and release the old because it's bringing down their energy. Aaron says that Manuel needs to be open to connection. He interrupts Ashley's translation, saying that he's trying and that the real problem is that Ashley doesn't trust him, even though he's never given her reason not to. He doesn't know where this is coming from because he's always honest and transparent with her. He also trusts her 100%. She stops the translation because she's frustrated and they start arguing in Spanish in front of Aaron as Manuel walks off. Ashley thinks that he has issues trusting her as well. He gets a drink and comes back. Ashley is offended and hurt that Manuel is acting like he's in a prison with her. All right. So I think who is kind of the weirder friend here? Leopoldo for preaching at lunch, or Aaron for speaking the language of light and trying to get Manuel involved?
Aaron, 1,000%. Like, the language of light, which other people know as extraterrestrials, of course, as we move on, it's like, what is this person talking about? And it's one of those things that comes up. I feel like people who are into alternate spirituality, alternate religions, mm-hmm. are like, well, is it really that weird? You're just used to, you know, Christianity or whatever. Are you really saying that this guy got nailed to a cross and now you eat his body and drink his blood every Sunday? Like, that sounds pretty weird too. No weirder what I'm saying. And it's like, I think they just have a different definition of weird than I do, because yeah. that's something that everyone knows is a much more of a cultural like thing. You grow up and you know about this religion, you know mm-hmm. about this thing, and that makes it less weird. It's not more unusual what the story is, but since we're all familiar with the story because it's a larger part of our culture, then that makes sense. This just sounded like she was making it all up herself, right? And that yeah. comes out of nowhere. I'm like, what? Like, she just used words that didn't make full sentences that were coherent at all. Like, I did not understand what she was talking about even a little bit. Much like Leopoldo when Ashley was talking.
Yeah, and that's why I kind of was like, oh, well, they're kind of doing the same-ish thing, right? Ashley's just kind of nodding and going along with it. Manuel's just kind of nodding off and going along with it. Mm-hmm. But Aaron's language of light, it kind of reminded me of kind of the religious equivalent of speaking in tongues, right?
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
So it was just like, well, I guess they're not that super far removed from one another. And I don't know. It also seemed to me that a lot of what Aaron was bringing up in her reading, which I was confused what was happening. Like, it was sure. some kind of reading, but it's like, you're Ashley's friend. Like, this is insider information. You already knew they had communication problems. You already knew that they had trust issues. I don't understand how this has anything to do with you reading their energy.
Exactly. No, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, you're just repeating to him what Ashley already said. Like,
yeah.
What is this? But I thought it was interesting that both of them seem to have a different definition. We've got past the weirdness of the speaking mm-hmm. in tongues and the alien language, and like, I don't know if I could have stomached it. I would have been like, yeah, I'm getting up. This You're is like,
I'm
weird.
Out.
I'm out. I'm have fun. Like, but like when they got to the main crux of the argument, which is they talk about trust, is they had completely kind of different definitions of what it looks like to trust somebody, mm-hmm. and that's kind of where the issue came from, right? Because Manuel was like, yeah, when you trust somebody, you leave them the hell alone and you don't worry about what they're doing when you're not there. Mm-hmm. And you don't ask them who they were talking to, and you don't feel like you have to go with them when they're visiting their family. Like, that's somebody you don't trust, right? And she was just like, her idea of trust is kind of the opposite of that. Like, you tell them everything. Anything you're doing, you let them know. Like, it's completely transparent. And so I don't know how they can bridge that gap, because they just have different ideas of what trust looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is very true. And I think it's also interesting because it's like, I did kind of make me question and second guess, like, wait, who has the trust issues with who? You know, because it seems to me that Ashley has more trust issues with Manuel.
Sure.
But she's trying mm-hmm. to make it seem like, you know, he doesn't trust her.
Right. And she's making it seem like, because you feel like you need to be keeping secrets mm-hmm. from me and you're not telling me everything, then you must not trust me with that information.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of trust. It's not it's not that he doesn't trust her to stay faithful or, you know, not cheat or anything. She feels like, oh, you don't trust me to know the deep, dark secrets of your heart and know what's going on with your family, even know what's going on with your kids. Right. And she's like, that is an indication of a lack of trust. I don't know what she thinks, whatever is going to happen if he tells anything about his kids. But she just feels like him keeping things private indicates that he doesn't trust her.
Right, right.
All right. So moving on, let's talk about, let's go to Lauren and Alexi. We get in the middle here, getting kind of some doldrums of the happy-go-lucky couple that we're not seeing much of. So the surgery, which Lauren keeps calling the mommy makeover, is tomorrow, and she's starting to get pretty nervous about it. And Alexei, every time she indicates any kind of anxiety or hesitation, is like, you know, you don't have to do it. We could just stop right now. We'll call him up. Don't do it. So they're on the way for the last like pre-op consultation, and she's excited and nervous about the whole thing. So she's trying to think of what questions to ask, like about scars. Alexei wants her to ask about risk, you know, the complications and how, you know, he's going to have to take care of everything while she recovers. Not asking the doctor about that, but like specifically, what will he have to take care of? So he also tries to get her to promise about not bitching at him for doing things his way, like doing laundry once a week instead of five times a day, as he says. So in the consultation, he's hoping that they're going to hear something that's going to scare her off. So we start off, the doctor comes in, he says it's going to be like a 4 or 5 hour surgery. He talks about the full extent of the surgery, and Alex asks about the side effects, and that's when we bring up the fact that she's going to have drains in for a few days, which is, it's weird. I've done drains before. They're weird.
Have you? And
yeah, yeah.
It sounds real gross.
Of course, Alex is going to have to maintain that. He's going to have to maintain the drains for about a week before they get taken back out. So Lauren didn't know about the drains. That was a new information for both of them. So the doctor also warns about popping a suture from picking up babies or basically anything for 6 to 8. And his whole recovery is going to be 6 to 8 weeks. So even after hearing all that, though, Lauren is set on doing it. And even though she could see the fear in Alexi's eyes about him, like, I have to maintain this household for this love for 8 weeks. I don't know. It sounds scary. She's still going to go through with it. So, yeah, I guess, I don't know. I think the thing I'm most bothered about by this whole situation is her using the phrase mommy makeover. I don't know why that bothers me, but mommy makeover, mommy makeover. I don't know why. It's just like.
I honestly think that's how they market it to,
maybe,
you know, to people like that, because it's usually, you know, the parts of your body that are most affected by pregnancy and breastfeeding. So that would be breasts, tummy tuck. And I think that's it. Yeah.
Oh, and there was abdominal tightening, which I think is a little weird. There's a tightening and reattaching of abdominal muscles, which is like, that seems less cosmetic to me. Like that actually has a medical purpose that goes along with, because he mentioned it would help with her like incontinence problems that you have when those muscles are loose. Right. And she even mentions like, oh yeah, that sounds great. I have definitely need that. And so that one, that's the part that I was like, I thought she would use that when everybody was arguing against her having this. I would have really leaned heavily into, no, I'm repairing the parts of my body that were damaged by this by these pregnancies.
Yeah.
Right. Rather than just like, I don't feel great when I look in the mirror. And that might be the real reason you're doing it. But when you're selling it to other people, it's much easier to be like, this is something I need to repair my body. Like,
yeah.
But I don't know. The phrase mommy in general, when people refer to themselves as mommy, is always like, just makes me feel a little bit off kilter.
That's interesting that you feel that way. I mean, yeah, it's interesting. I just think that it's such a common thing. I mean, I've known a couple people who've gotten the mommy makeover. Okay, so you're saying you dislike it. So what is your proposal for that package of surgeries?
Renaming. Like, I don't understand. Well, I guess, I wouldn't use mommy, right?
Okay.
And I don't know that I'd use necessarily makeover. I'd be like, something I'd use like postpartum instead of mommy. Right. Okay. Some sort of postpartum like rejuvenation or something like that. Right. I would come up probably on the spot, but I would definitely use postpartum instead of mommy.
Okay.
Like, but that's me. But that's also kind of my thing is if I'm getting a surgery done, this is a medical scientific procedure. Why are we saying mommy? Like, let's use like big scientific words, please. I want those when I'm going to go
the
under
whole,
the knife.
Like marketing thing is you're trying to appeal to your audience.
I guess so. And I'm certainly not the audience. Like,
yeah. And your audience probably would refer to themselves as mommies.
That is 100. That is true. Yes. That is 100% true.
Yeah.
But I mean, the drains are weird. And I mentioned I did them. So my ex-wife actually had a, when we were still married, had a surgery where she, had an abdominal surgery where there were things removed. And after they did it, there was drains that had to go in. And it's weird, but it's remarkable how quickly you can acclimate yourself to things that are weird, right? Mm-hmm. There are, and that's all it is. It's like little tubes come out and they have like plastic, balls at the end, and you drain and the liquid's in the ball, and you drain the ball, and then you close it, you squeeze it and close it up so that the ball's trying to like expand. And so there's a little bit of suction. And yeah, it just, I don't know. It's weird. That's part of, and to be fair, part of this was after I was a parent, and I feel like being a parent and dealing with all the gross baby stuff that goes on, you're just like, whatever, I'll take it. It's fine. It doesn't matter. I'm not grossed out by it anymore.
Yeah. I can definitely see that because, Yeah, it's like even, you know, having a pet and having to deal with like pet poop and vomit and stuff literally, like that. Yeah.
You get a dog and you're like, okay, and my regular everyday routine is to put a bag on my hand and pick up poop.
Like right. So it's like you definitely have a different standard of what's gross. But
yeah,
given my current situation in life, that sounds gross.
Fair enough.
That sounds real gross.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. All right. So maybe a different kind of gross. Different kind of gross. Let's talk Ed and Liz. Oof. So, yeah, Ed is at a bar getting ready to meet Liz. Ed says that Liz screaming at him over the taco pasta incident, he knew that it wasn't going to work. Ed called TC the officiant to tell him that the wedding is off. He can see how TC's call to Liz probably caught her off guard.
Probably, just a little, you know.
He hasn't talked to Liz since, but he thinks he owes her a face-to-face. He doesn't want to plan a wedding because he knows it's just going to fail. He says that he paid for them to move out to Arkansas and planned for Riley to be there. And for Liz to treat him like this, he just isn't going to stand for it. He doesn't want to be divorced a second time. He realizes in his older age that life is short and he just doesn't want to waste time with Liz. Liz calls and asks if a bar is really a healthy place for them to meet, especially since she has Riley. Ed says that she's the mom and she can figure it out. Liz says that they haven't spoken in 3 days, and now she gets a text giving her an hour to meet him. He then, like, just starts to jump into the conversation I think he was trying to have with her when they meet in person, and he brings up taco pasta gate.
Mm-hmm.
Liz says that this conversation, yes, it needs to happen, but the call is about where to meet and when. We then see a text from Liz saying that she was given no notice about this and doesn't think a bar is an appropriate place to meet for a delicate conversation. Ed says that they can just have the conversation over the phone then. And Liz is assuming that Ed will say all the same old things. Liz doesn't want to let this go because she's fought so hard to be there. Ed wants them to both be adults and admit that they weren't meant to be together and it's never going to work. He wants to figure things out and just go their separate ways. Ed keeps insisting over the phone that they are done, and Liz just hangs up. Okay, so it does seem kind of extreme that you get in this fight over how spicy food is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is this very, like very low level, like, if you think about what you're disagreeing about. And I get that the reaction is what is telling him that this should be done. But do you think that there's some other underlying thing for Ed to go to this extreme?
I mean, I think he was already being Ed and getting cold feet and not wanting to do it. And this was like, oh, great, a fight. Here's an excuse for me to just back out.
Right.
Right. And like, as evidenced by he's trying to, like, he's just acting super weird, this whole situation. And we mostly see him going through it. And every time we see Ed, he does this thing where he's just trying to convince us that he's being normal. He's being rational. He's being, you know, the smart one, the intelligent one. And it just doesn't make any sense. Like, if you put yourself in the other perspective, it's like we got in a fight over something that was seemingly typical of our regular fights. We've had this fight. We've had similar level fights many times before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then he disappears and stops talking to you. And when he does talk to you, he says, all right, here's a 2-hour window when I can meet with you starting now. Right. And then when you try to talk to him about it, it's like, listen, we both need to just grow up and realize this isn't going to work. It's like, where did that come from? Like that we both need to grow up and realize this isn't going to work. That's like the end. That's like if she's still trying to make it work 6 months later, not like literally the next time you talk to her after you had a fight. It was, listen, we both know it's going to work and we might as well just grow up and realize that. Why don't you grow up and realize that? Because I did. You should just realize that now. It's like you had a fight over food. And the next time you talk to him, he's like, we both know this isn't this. We both know why this doesn't work. It's like, do we? I don't. This is very, very extreme place to go to it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just absurd. But I mean, I just don't understand how he thinks he's acting like an adult. You know, he hasn't thrown it in her face yet, but he's like throwing it out there. Like, I just want us to both be adults. It's like, is breaking up with your fiance via your officiant an adult thing to do?
Right. Right.
No. Is your giving her an hour notice for a now or never seemingly conversation like the adult thing to do?
Right. Is having that wanting to and picking the place for that conversation to be a bar when you know that she has to bring her kid. And you give her an hour. That means she has to bring her kid to this conversation no matter where it is. Like that kid should not be there for that conversation. Like, and let alone at a bar, which she was like, it's the most inappropriate place. And I was like, what's not the most inappropriate place?
Sure. There could be worse places. Just that. And, you know, it's like, does he want to have it at a bar so that way, you know, she can't make a scene?
Well, and that's fine. I get that. It should be. I could understand having it in a public place so people don't get it. I shouldn't say so people don't get, because we've seen both of these people. Oh, they God, will definitely I know, right? make a scene in public, right? But it's less likely, right? And you got more of a chance of people remaining civil. But I agree with her that there shouldn't be alcohol involved.
Right. Oh, well, it's too late for that. He's already been drinking. Light beer. Right. That's what he ordered. Can I have a light beer?
Yes, because that gets you something served. I would like a light beer.
What the hell beer is that? Okay, they only have one light beer. They're probably like, whatever, just give him
guy Miller Bud Coors, whatever's closest. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Yeah. And yeah, right. It's such. Yeah. And the small window. And then what I was confused about was we kept seeing the text messages she sent. Right. Mm-hmm. And it was, things about it says in a delicate place like this, blur the rest of the message. And it was like, why is half of his message blurred out? And why did it start getting blurred there? Like, I'm very clear. I was very curious about that. But honestly, I feel like this is probably not a conversation they should have in person out loud. This seems like one of those conversations should be had via email. Like when you have all the time to put all of your thoughts into a thing and edit it and like come back to it later and be like, yeah, I was kind of pissed off when I wrote that. This sounds really bad. Let me change that. Right. I find those for conversations like this that get heated and emotional. I found that to be much more like productive.
Yeah, definitely.
Whatever, he's still a jerk. And it's like the frustrating part is like he says it and he just says has this condescending way of talking, of being like, well, obviously this is a good idea. And it's like, no, actually it's an awful idea. Why are you being condescending with an awful idea? Like, you're an idiot.
Yeah, he's just so terrible. He just frustratingly terrible.
Yeah, he's like, we need to do the adult thing and, just wear our clothes inside out like we know we should. Everybody knows we should. It's like, why are you – what? What are you talking about?
He's just so bizarre to me too, because it's like he has to know that everybody hates him, that he is the villain of this show.
Mm-hmm. Sure. You would imagine he knows that, right?
Yeah. And I just don't understand, like, is he really that terrible of a person?
Because even when we had that conversation, he just – she's like, why are we meeting at a bar? Can we meet somewhere else? He's like, listen, Liz, you were yelling at me on the phone. And it's like, oh, God. Like, just the way he starts with listen. Every time he starts with listen, it's just going to be infuriating.
Yeah.
So speaking of more infuriating idiots, let's go to Jasmine and Gino. So Jasmine and Gino are trying to walk Coco in the park. But walk is being used loosely here because Coco's in a stroller, which is like, it's a point of taking the dog for a walk if the dog doesn't walk. But Coco, anyway, has different plans and hops out and makes them chase him all over the place. So Gino says that Coco loves people, and Jasmine's like, nah, Coco loves guys because he's gay, which is like, I don't think hanging out with male humans makes the dog gay. But anyway, Jasmine says that her mom got her biopsy results yesterday and she does have cancer, but they caught it early and it seems treatable. So it's really a new dynamic for the family, for Jasmine not to be able to be right there, right in person to support her mom in this important time. So she feels like her time in the U.S. has just been bad news after bad news. And then Gino brings up how tough things were for his mom when she got cancer and died, which seems like not the thing to bring up when you're like, my mom has cancer. And he's like, well, my mom died of cancer. I remember that. And it's like, don't.
Yeah. You can't relate, Gino. Just stop.
So it's also just like, don't. Yeah, I don't know. It's like the worst thing. So anyway, so he brings it up to mean kind of he knows what she's going through. Mm-hmm. So she tells him that she's never been this depressed before. He thinks they should be before. He's like, yeah, you're depressed, but we should be celebrating because your birthday's coming up. You shouldn't be sitting here and being sad. So maybe, and you know, with Gino's get out of jail card, maybe we'll go on a trip. So she says that her friend Leandro has invited them to stay with him in Miami, and that's where she wants to go because it's close. He's like, he's such a close friend. It's he's like family. So Gino gets it and isn't threatened by Leandro because I'm pretty sure he's gay too. Isn't that the hairdresser or something from Panama?
Yeah, I think so.
So that's what they're going to do. So then we jump right to the airport in order to minimize our time in Michigan. And when they get to Miami, Jasmine is already energized by seeing the sun and the sand and other Latinos because she doesn't see any of those in Michigan, which I feel like then she's just looking in the wrong places. There's
right,
definitely Latinos
in Michigan,
right?
If you really look.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, Gino's attempts at Spanish are really bad. And then he tries to say arroz a bunch of times and cannot get it right.
Yeah.
So then Jasmine is excited to see Leandro, who, because they get down to crazy things together, like the time he encouraged her to have sex in a public place with someone else, like an ex before she was with Gino. Gino's like, well, that's a fantasy of mine. I always wanted to do that. And then we get more of Gino's fantasies for some reason. We don't need to go into that. So they get to Leandro's house and it's all hugs and champagne. And so Leandro knows that has known Jasmine for 5 years or so. And they get the grand tour of his American dream, even though it is rented. So he brings out some birthday cupcakes and asks her to make a wish. And then, of course, the mood gets brought down because her wish is about like, I wish my kids were here and I wish my mom, I could be there with my mom. It's like, oh, no, now we're depressed again. Yeah. So now she's sad. And the only people around are her dumb American husband and her one single friend to comfort her. And she's really missing Panama and getting homesick. So I think the obvious question to ask here is, if you don't have $5,000 for a lawyer, where is the Miami travel money coming from?
That is an excellent question that I just did not even think about right now. Yeah, I mean, I doubt that the entire trip is costing $5,000, but you're right. That could be a contribution to the lawyer fees. And it's like, you know, I feel like, you know, he's trying to curb her spending in general. And that would have been the perfect card to play. Like, listen, if we want this to happen, we got to live frugally right now. But he's not even doing that. Like, this just all doesn't make sense. I feel like it's just a plot point, especially mm-hmm. given what we know about this couple. They're certainly milking it for all they have. I mean, I do feel bad because we got a flashback of, you know, Jasmine and her stress-related alopecia. Mm-hmm. So it's like she's clearly going through something, but I think we're also playing up Gino's like part in all of this. Because let's be real here, even I don't think the mess up was like staged or anything. I think that was an honest mistake on his part. But if they get a lawyer versus not get a lawyer, it's still 18 months and that's stressful.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, and but that's also kind of like if she's sitting there and being like, I'm depressed. There's so many things going on in my life. I'm stressed. Why doesn't he just suggest like maybe let's see a therapist instead of like, let's go to Miami. Like,
yeah, I know, right.
Because obviously when we get there, obviously that's not the thing that's going to make her depression and her stress and her anxiety over these things
right.
like dissipate or be able to deal with them better because it just pops right back up as soon as there's right. birthday candles.
Yeah. My goodness. Yeah. Just, I don't know. Their problem solving just in general is not the brightest.
Well, I mean, that's literally his solution to every problem is we should go on a trip.
Yeah.
Like they did it so many. They did it in Panama. They did it now. It's just like.
That is true. We are.
Things are going
right.
Let's go to a trip. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think also because they know like, well, I don't think TLC or Sharp is really footing the bill here. But, you know, in a very indirect way, I'm sure they are.
I'm sure that Sharp is like. Filming in Miami is better than filming in Michigan. Like, yeah. It's better TV. Get to Miami. Get out of Michigan.
Right.
Michigan sucks.
Yeah. Speaking of getting out, let's talk about Patrick and Thais. So Patrick's dad, Jose, has stopped by the apartment to drop off paint. Thais is smiling, kind of like fakely. And Patrick didn't tell Thais that Jose was coming because he didn't want to give her an opportunity to say no. Jose holds Elise, the baby, and tells them that she looks just like Patrick. This is Jose's first grandchild. He calls her chunky and heavy, like in a cutesy way. Patrick tells us that he has a complicated relationship with Jose. When his mom first divorced Jose, they had moved far away, so he didn't see his dad much. And when Jose retired, he moved to Brazil. Patrick started to spend more time with his dad after he retired. They have bonded a lot more since Patrick was visiting Brazil and Thais often. Thais says that she didn't know he was stopping by, and she was expecting to just get everything set up, trying to hint to Jose. Mm-hmm. And Patrick and Jose kind of awkwardly look at each other and change the subject. Patrick says that he'll be there for 2 weeks, so Jose says that they have to get work done tomorrow to clean and paint the walls. Thais is kind of frustrated because Jose owns the apartment that they're renting, but he keeps raising the rent and asking them to pay rent even early. He also asks them to do things that are not the responsibility of a tenant. Jose has a whole list of things for Patrick to do. Thais thinks that Jose is taking advantage of Patrick. Patrick likes to be able to help his family. Patrick even says he would want to help out on the ranch that I'm assuming Jose lives at, but he doesn't know about painting the apartment just because of his knee. Thais thinks that Patrick is seeking approval, but Jose just takes what he can get. After Jose leaves, Thais complains to Patrick, and Patrick said that, you know, Jose just stopped by to drop off the paint to be nice. Thais thinks that Jose just asks for too much, and Patrick says he's just asking him to do things because Jose doesn't have money, and Thais doesn't think that's the case, especially since they are the ones paying rent. Thais thinks Jose is using Patrick and has selfish intentions. Patrick doesn't think that his dad is well off, so if he can help, he wants to. He wants to give his side of the family some attention too while they're out in Brazil. Okay, do you agree with Thais's assessment of this, that Jose is just kind of using Patrick? Or, you know, do you think that she's just being too hard and that, you know, Jose is just Jose and, you know, Patrick, you know, along with it?
I don't know that Jose would say that he's using. I think it depends on people's definition of using, right? I feel like he's just like, I have apartment. They need apartment. Rent apartment. Yeah. End of story. Like, yeah. And it gets me money. And if I needed more money, then I can just raise the rent of the apartment because that's how renting works, right? And so I think Jose would look at that and be like, I'm not using you. It's a win-win situation. Everybody gets what they need. Like, no problem, right? The part where he at once – and then it kind of – but then it's a weird situation, right? Because I feel like if – it's not really not that crazy unusual if your dad owns a property and it needs to get repainted to be like, oh, I'm going to go paint the house the renting house next week. Could you come help me? And like, okay, I'll come help you, Dad. That's not crazy unusual. What's unusual about it is that he's also the tenant, right? And so he's like, paint my own thing. And so that kind of feels like a little bit, because it also just seems like, and then we brought up the ranch stuff, that Jose's only asking not because he actually needs help, but because I don't want to paint. Like, this is a boring job. You do it. Somebody else do it.
Yeah, but maybe he also sees it as like a time to spend with Patrick.
Right? Yeah, I can
and
see
so,
that.
You know, like having something to do with the, you know, because who knows, maybe Jose would have to do this by himself anyway. And so he's like, kill two birds with one stone, like hang out with son and get crap done that was on my to-do list anyway.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty common father-son kind of like relationship is like, do we just like ever just, we call up and like, oh, son, let's spend some time together and hang out. No, it's like, hey, son, something needs done. Let's get together and do something. Like, I have needs. I have to have, like, you have to have an excuse to hang out with your dad. And it's not a healthy, that's not a healthy dynamic, but I think it's a pretty common dynamic, right? Where dads will just, like, think of something that needs done just to be like, oh, maybe I'll put a fence up. I'll call my son to help me put up this fence now because that gives me an excuse to come over here.
The only kind of weird thing about this situation is if they're the ones, Patrick and Thais, who are renting out this apartment, why does it need to get painted in the first place?
I mean, that usually places get painted in between tenants. And I guess if it's really bad and the paint's like peeling off the walls and stuff, it needs to get repainted, right? No matter whether somebody's moving out or not. But It also just seems like, definitely seems like one of those situations, because they're the tenants, that it could just be like, can you guys just paint the apartment while you're there this time and I'll knock it off next month's rent. That's like the minute which is spent, right?
Yeah, but according to Thais, like, that's not going to happen. He's going to still ask for rent to be paid.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that that blending of the landlord-tenant and father-son relationship is a little tricky. But yes, if you're providing labor for the apartment and spending money on the apartment that you're living in for the apartment, that should come off the rent. You shouldn't be charging full rent for that.
Yeah. I can kind of see what Thais is saying. I see from her perspective that Jose seems to be like maybe a little bit more shady about things and maybe more bold to ask things that you wouldn't necessarily ask a tenant. You would never ask a tenant, hey, can you pay early? Kind of need the money to float me by. You know, it's like you wouldn't ask.
I've heard some bad stories about landlords, but yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, you wouldn't expect that. You wouldn't expect them to be like, I want the place painted. Can you please paint your own apartment?
And and pay full price rent next time. Oh, actually, I'm increasing the rent next time. So just we'll do that because it's newly painted. So obviously it's worth more money now.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's not wrong. And I think it is a weird situation to have that double relationship going on. Am I helping my dad with his property or my apartment that I'm renting?
Yeah.
All right. So speaking of other weird situations, let's go to Nicole and Mahmoud. So we're still on that one night. And Julian is physically restraining Mahmoud from just like walking into the – he literally thinks Mahmoud's just going to walk to the bottom of the driveway and just walk into traffic.
Yeah, I know, right?
So he's like, please don't spit. It's good because it's dark and it's a very busy street. So Julian is just trying to get Mahmoud to sit down. Mahmoud really just wants to walk it off, right? I need to blow off some steam. I need to take a walk. But Julian just thinks immediately this guy's going to get lost. He doesn't know where he is. Like he can't – it's just – I think a little bit insulting. You'd think I can't walk down the street and then turn around and walk back down the street I just came up. Like, I don't care where I am. I can do that. But anyway, he tries to get Mahmoud to sit down and eventually he sits and stays and has a smoke. So he really doesn't like all of his yelling. And this is the second time that she told him to leave her a place. He's like, fine, then I'll leave and I'll find a place to sleep tonight. And then after that, I'm going to do whatever I can to get out of his house. So Mahmoud really wants to go for a walk, really still wants to go on this walk by himself. And so Julian like does like he's dealing with a toddler. He's like, okay, just walk to the corner and make sure I can still see you. Just walk to the corner, okay? And then you're going to come back, right? Yeah, sure. And so anyway, back at the house, Nicole says she's embarrassed that her friends had to see that. I'm not exactly sure what she meant by that at first, but she does mean all the drama that she started. And she feels like she's right to be upset despite everything, because she tried so many times. She went to, you know, he moved to Egypt how many times, tried so hard. And him, he's packing his bags 2 days in. And he just gave up.
Yeah.
So she calls him when he's at the corner and asks, like, what's the plan? What are you doing? Where are we going? What's happening? And he tells her he wants to stay in a hotel, but won't tell her what hotel or how he's going to make that happen. Like, do you have any money? How's this working? So it seems like everyone thinks it's a good idea that he not be there tonight, but also aren't sure how they can make how he's going to be able to make the hotel happen. You know, this being like his second day outside of Egypt ever. So we kind of, I guess he gets a hotel, because next we see him trying and failing to order, get an Uber, and production is just like, we will drive you there. Just get in the car. So in the car, he talks about how Nicole didn't seem like she's the same person here, and maybe love isn't enough for marriage, and this whole thing just seems like it's over. So evidently he did make it to a hotel, because we see him the next day and he's still walking around by himself and manages to get himself some tea. So he like is a grown up. So he doesn't know why Nicole is so upset. Like, does she even still love him? Is it just too different for her when he's here? Like, what made this all happen? So he definitely doesn't like how she acts with her friends. And he says he loves her, but doesn't know. He's like the situation. I love you. I just don't know if I can be with you. So he sits outside the cafe and drinks his tea and gives her a call to tell her, you know, he's sad about everything she did last night. It was very, very like, it's like, how are you feeling? He's like, I'm sad for everything you did last night. So she turns this around and says she was only mean because he was mean to her all day long before that. And, you know, mean to her by saying he wanted a divorce at some point, mean to her by not going to dinner with the friends, just mean. So he says that also she's not happy about the $300 he spent on her credit card to get the hotel room last night, which is like, she's like, I just don't have $300 to drop. So he says he'll send her the money for that, whatever. And it's, he only did that because his credit card didn't work. He tried to use his credit card first. So he's still pretty upset because he tells us, like, she's still upset because, and then this is just, I don't know why she thinks, she just says things that is like, that's not going to help the situation at all. Because she's like, well, I don't know, you've just done nothing but cause problems when you've been here. And actually, you know what? You've done nothing but cause me problems for the last 4 years.
Oh my goodness.
And so then he's like, okay, I'll come get my stuff and that's it. We're done. And she goes, okay, give me a couple hours. So he said he wanted to find a way to be together with her, but he keeps saying, she keeps talking shit. She keeps saying shit about me. Yeah. So how is this going to work? So we get to Nicole's, then we get Nicole's side where she's putting all those pillows. Remember, her bed is covered in pillows, like, right. Half the bed is pillows.
Yeah.
She's just putting them back on the bed. She is feeling like she was 100% disrespected, and you know, things didn't go that well earlier, but she's willing to try to have a conversation again when she shows up to get his stuff. So he comes back and she first thing she does is like makes fun of his shoes and is like, oh my God, you were in those shoes all day. She's wearing like checkered Van slides or something. So they are like, how are you doing? And there's a lot of just awkward silence as he goes into his bag and packs it. And she's like, did you eat anything? He's like, yeah. And she's like, well, where are you staying? And he's just, can also tell that he just doesn't want to talk about things. She's trying to make this conversation happen. But before he walks out, he gives her some of the things that she needs, her credit card, the phone, and the money he owed her. I guess she had bought him a phone. I don't know. There was for some reason, he had to give her the phone back and the money for the hotel. So anyway, this is like her opening to start this conversation, aka argument again, about who was right and who was wrong. They both pretty accurately recapped the day up to the point where she was like, you even told me I wanted a divorce. And he was like, well, I still do. And she was like, well, then just get out of here. So he says the relationship is over and he's determined. He has no plan, no phone, but he's determined, like I said, to get back to Egypt. So I just don't understand. Is she trying to get back together with him, or is she trying to drive him farther away?
Because I don't know, because she has not acted like she wants to be with him at all this season.
Yeah. But she keeps saying she does. I really want to be with you, you shitless coward. I want you, like, who I want out of my house, but I love you. Why are you not coming back? Get the hell out. It's like, what? It's totally inconsistent. It's wild.
Yeah, it's super crazy and bizarre. I also kind of feel bad for the guy because, you know, how do you navigate like getting home if you don't have a credit card or money? Because I'm assuming, you know, that he doesn't have a whole lot of money. And it's like, I'm wondering who paid for his flight out to the U.S. in the first place. Mm-hmm. Is she planning on paying for him to go back? Like, we just don't know. And I just feel really bad that this is his situation.
Yeah. Like, I don't. He is in a very bad situation, and like, but he needs, it's worse to stay. He has to go back. He has to.
Well, he can't be spending $300 a night on a hotel room. Like, that's absurd.
Yeah, that is a lot it's not a super lot. I'm not talking about a huge luxury hotel, but like, if you go to a name brand hotel in a downtown-ish LA area, you're going to pay some money for a hotel, right? There's not going to be a bunch of places that are going to be. He's not going to be able to get a $69 a night hotel room anywhere near there. Right. And not that he's checked. I'm sure he was just like, first hotel I saw, book. Like, there we go. But yeah, he can't do that. But I'm saying he has to get out. He can't stay with Nicole. Like, they have to break up. They have to.
Yeah, definitely. I'm surprised that they're even together at this point. I mean, at what point is our real life coming into this where it's like the domestic
violence accusation that was with the charges dropped, right?
Because he's about to peace out in a second, so there's not that much more time.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, assuming he does, I mean, maybe he comes back, but that's just like, at the end of the day, it's just like that same situation we see with Liz specifically. It's mm-hmm. like, well, you're the one who came back 13 times knowing exactly what you were getting into. So yeah. at what point do I stop feeling sorry for you?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. All right. We did not hear from
Sophie and Rob,
that was it. Okay, so out of the group we saw this week, who was your student of the week?
I say Kobe. Because he was just, I felt really bad for the guy just being, because what he said made sense. This is a dumb conversation to have. Let's stop having it and have fun. And like, nobody would listen to the man.
Yeah, yeah. I actually went with Thais. I think that she is trying to navigate Patrick's family as best as she can. And, you know, I think she's getting her point across without coming across as too rude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or overimposing. So yeah, I sure. went with her. Mm-hmm. What about your dunce?
I'm gonna say Ed. Like that whole yeah, just pulling the crap with this thing and trying to and that's what's so frustrating about Ed. He constantly takes the low road and tries to convince us that it's the mm-hmm. high road.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what he's doing here.
Yeah, definitely. What about your life lesson?
I would say this goes to Ashley and Manuel for both, you know, the uncle and, you know, and the other person. Like, you kind of have to ease into throwing your religious stuff at everybody and, you know, kind of see how read the room and see how receptive the audience is before you go all in with your let's just quote Bible verses and do light readings on you. Like,
oh my
let's
goodness.
See how receptive people are to that first.
Yeah. My life lesson is for Gino and Jasmine. If you are working towards something that is a large financial cost, let's prioritize our, you know, spending. And so that way you can save and actually meet those goals instead of never making any progress because you keep on spending on smaller items.
Sure. I mean, it's real easy to be like, we don't have $5,000 for this, but
we do have $1,000. Yeah. To go on this trip now. And it's mm-hmm. like, yeah, well, you do have $1,000, but you're never going to get to the $5,000 if you keep on spending the money that you have.
Exactly. Sure. Yeah.
All right. So we will be back this time next week. Do we have another couple? Do we have any updates on Michael and Angela?
I at this point, I think Angela got the boot, like from okay. TLC. And we're all not right. going to hear from her.
Okay. That's an interesting theory. We may potentially be a day late next week because I'm going to be at a festival.
at festival.
Okay. I'm going to be at festival. Could probably, I don't know. You could probably find out what festival I'm going to be at. There's not that many festivals
very,
going on.
Very reminiscent of Natalie, who's like, I am in wood.
Oh, yeah. Well, I will be at festival, so may take me an extra day to watch the shows and get caught up. So
All right.
We will potentially be back next Tuesday.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, sounds good. Until then.
All right, see everybody then.
All right,
okay.
Bye. Good.